You're listening to the More Time, More Profit Podcast, the best place for entrepreneurs who are looking to grow past the startup phase of their business, but still need to learn how to free up more time to drive more profit. Now, to present these real strategies, your successful business coaches and hosts, Adam John and Grant Muriel.
Welcome to More Time, More Profit, episode number 56. Today we're talking about unlocking your entrepreneurial genius with Jeffrey Hanslick. My name is Adam John, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Grant Muriel. What's going on, Grant?
Not much, buddy. Asking yourself deep inner questions can be all it takes to get that stroke of genius. Just look at how beneficial 10 minutes of meditation can be. So give your entrepreneurial brain that time it deserves by downloading and walking through the Entrepreneurial Genius Framework by going to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/056.
So today we're focusing on mindset and unlocking your entrepreneurial genius. The fact of the matter is that running a business is hard, and before we get into business, we usually undertake very little, if any, training. We get taught in school how to read, write, and do math, etc. But when you get into business, there is a huge knowledge gap. We're going to stumble, we're going to make mistakes, and we're going to burn massive amounts of cash experimenting ideas that might not pay off. How do you handle these events as a business owner? Do you just bury your head in the sand, or do you grow from the experience? How do you handle failure? And are you truly doing the right job from within your company that ignites your passion? Sometimes we can get lost in the scramble of running a business day to day and end up doing chores that we hate. Everyone has a gift and everyone has an inner genius, and today we'll help you unlock it so you can be happier in your business and so that you can drive more time and more profit in your life. I really wish I had this framework 10 years ago. I would have avoided a mountain of stress, burnout, broken relationships inside and outside of the company, and I'm sure the company would have performed 5 to 10 times better. Grant, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, mate. Look, I couldn't agree more. I've got a similar view, but from a little bit of a different perspective, right? So when I graduated high school, I actually completed a university course where I mastered in entrepreneurship. The expectation from myself was that this course would teach us the fundamentals we needed in order to be successful in our own business, ranging from marketing, accounting, finance, business structures, law, etc. The list goes on. But what it didn't prepare you for, even over 3 years, was how to cope with failure, how to continue driving and motivating yourself through tough times, how to leverage yourself and others around you, how to scale the appropriate funding, etc., etc. The list is endless, right? So I know that there is a huge gap within our educational system and even within the mainstream business books that we read day to day, which they don't really cover the concept of checking in with yourself, understanding where your current gaps and issues lie, recalibrating where you are on a personal and deeper level, not just where you should be getting to from a business perspective, and also being able to close the gap or get clarity around the real issues that are holding you or even your business back. And this is why there are so many entrepreneurs who now do meditation. They have a coach, they seek out masterminds, and lean on others to help call out these real root cause issues. So similar to most of the episodes that we're doing now, this one really scratches a current itch that I have, where I really need to reassess myself in order for me to take the business up another notch. Being able to recognize what we are doing right now in the current place is critical for me to instantly improve and constantly evolve as an organization. But for me, I really need to recognize where I am personally, where I have reservations, and where I'm limiting myself in order to excel for everybody else. So there's no better time than the present. So let's jump into it, mate.
Beautiful. So today we've got Jeffrey Hanslick on the show. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, thanks so much, guys. Great being here.
Jeff is one of those guys who, when we met, we instantly bonded. For the past 15 years, Jeff has helped more than 200 clients as both a trained psychotherapist and executive coach. He works with executives, founders of startups, and professionals from varied backgrounds. People who, despite their high degree of intelligence and competence, struggle with the inherent challenges of any entrepreneurial venture. One thing I love about Jeff is his off-site coaching for teams, which combines surfing, executive coaching, and team development. And now, if that isn't enough, he's also a mentor at Techstars, an international accelerator. He can be found teaching people in the US and internationally out of his practice in New York City. Of course, that if he's not surfing in Mexico or scuba diving some exotic location, or he might just take you with him. It's an absolute pleasure having you on, Jeff. So tell me about how you got into, fell into, or was pulled into executive coaching.
Thanks for the introduction. It's beautiful to hear. It's great to have the space to think about it, because everything that I've done since I was 18 years old has really been about understanding what it means to be a human being. And, you know, it's interesting how life takes us along its own path and we end up in places we didn't even expect. So being an executive coach these days is not something that was on my radar 20 years ago, and yet it's one of the most dynamic and exciting professions I could be involved in. In my path to becoming an executive coach and working with all sorts of founders and leaders and executives, it's actually evolved through like a series of life experiences. And this hunger and desire, I had to understand the human spirit and how humans worked. And 20 years ago, when I was a student at Middlebury College, I was a junior there, and I had a professional trajectory in mind. I was moving my way towards finance and a degree in business, and I was blindsided and slammed into by a depressive disorder, an episode that took me down for about 6 months. And it was a crisis that basically took my life off its current trajectory and sent me on a journey that was unexpected and oftentimes resisted, but ultimately to understanding myself. So a big part of that depression and that early struggle was to get my butt on a therapist couch at the age of 21 and start that process of self-examination. And I started to meditate, attending 10-day Buddhist silent retreats, start to study my mind. And then I got really interested in shamanism, and I spent about 18 years traveling into the deep jungles of the Amazon and the mountains of Brazil, hanging out in all sorts of huts with different shamans and folks to kind of look at the spiritual side of things. And that led me down to a path of being a psychotherapist for a long time, and was getting a lot of reps in the chair, seeing all sorts of people over about 10 years. And it was almost like a laboratory where I was able to experiment, and people were coming in the door, and I was just began to let myself get in their shoes and see what was needed and to tweak this and work with different modalities. And by the end of it, I was able to develop my own processes. But it was interesting because as I worked with people along the way, what I started to see was there's a limitation to that therapeutic modality. There's a lot of looking towards the past to resolve it, to come into the future, looking at pathologies, things like that. And I felt that it was limited, and I wanted to see people move forward. I felt that they could get further along than they were, and that there was more to who they were. There was a greater potential to be accessed. And I knew that was true for them, and I knew it was true for me. I always get an itch, and I started to search and look and travel and read. And through that process, I ended up meeting a man by the name of Jerry Colonna, who's a wonderful man, wonderful coach, great human being, and now a friend and colleague of mine. And he was deeply involved in the venture tech space, and he invited me in and made some invitations and said, look, I think you should take your skill set and bring it into the business world. And it's just been a fascinating crossover for me to basically take my game to South Beach and see if I had what it takes to do this work and apply it at this level. So what I'm finding as I'm moving along here is that everybody's human, and a lot of the folks that are driving the innovation, that are moving things forward, that are running business, are, you know, everybody's smart, everybody's got game, and yet at the same time, we're all human beings. And so I found a real niche, a real need for the skill set that I had to help them develop and ultimately impact the trajectories that their businesses were on.
So you've gone from the Amazon to New York City. A bit of a change of pace there.
Absolutely.
So what was that ha-ha moment for you when you first realized that you could be an executive coach? Was it, you know, when these people are coming over to seek your advice, did you have a real good breakthrough with someone? Do you have a real success story? What was that point where you're just like, this is my calling?
Yeah, I think it was a two-point process in there, like two parts of it. One was as I hit that ceiling in terms of what I felt the therapy could do with folks, and that showed up for me of just getting impatient. And it was pushing clients so hard that they wouldn't come back. They couldn't take it. So my practice started to empty out because I started to push a little too hard. And then I got invited in to sit down at a day-long piece of work for the Techstars, one of the classes. And what I saw in the room was a huge amount of potential, a lot of amazing people that were at the top of their game, creating some of the most interesting companies. And yet they were challenged, and it was hard for them, the stress that they were under, the depression they were facing, and the tears that came out that day, the fear that each of them was facing was a real wake-up call to me that all these folks really need a strong line of support. And it wasn't much different than the folks within the therapeutic realm. It was just a far different context.
Awesome. Enough of the chit-chat. Let's get into the meat of the episode.
Sure. Let's do it.
So let's jump into it. So today we're talking about unlocking your entrepreneurial genius. And I can see exactly that transition of where you've gone from a psychotherapist all the way through to this executive coaching realm now, especially through sort of the Techstars side. So when you see one of those entrepreneurs, right, just what's the framework or the process or steps at an extremely high level that you apply to every new client or every new upcoming tech entrepreneur that you get involved with? And really sort of how do you walk them through some of the challenges in their business or in themselves, whether it's internally, externally, or otherwise, in order for them to sort of work through these inherent issues that you see?
The interesting thing about coaching that I find is that I don't know that there's a system that I follow. And I think any good coach is going to tell you there's no direct system about showing up. I mean, if you think about going to a party, if you went to each person and brought your method of how you socialize to each person, I think you'd be fairly limited in what you could access. But as we sit down with somebody, there's, you know, you want to really want to start to get a sense of where they're at. where they are at in their business, where they're at in their life. And the framework that I'm always using is I see that people have a real potential for where they could be. And even the most high-performing people, I always find are firing at about a 6 out of 10. And they're generally strong in several areas. And then there's a weakness or something that they're not accessing. And most of those folks, the clients come at different levels, but a lot of them are facing some place where they're stuck, where they can't get through, and they need some help to break through. And that can show up in a number of different ways. There's a lot of noise out there about crushing it, and that there's a premium based on competency, on ability, on control, of having things dialed. So a lot of people that I work with, when they come in the room, they're showing up having to be competent and demonstrate a level of success. And what I find is when they get into a safe space, when there's a room for them, they start to open up about the real story going on, about the reality that they don't quite know what's going on, that they're scared, that they're stressed, that there's fear, and there's not quite a place for it. They don't know where to go with it. And the culture of a lot of startups, a culture of a lot of business, is that we already should know. I think Grant was referring to that in the beginning, is there's no school for this. And yet the setup for us is not easy. We have to show good face. Our business, the people, you know, if we're in a CEO position or a leadership position, we can't really lead on that we're in the dark or things are going in a direction that we're not sure about. And so it's really critical for folks in those positions to have a place to begin to work with that. And one of the things I notice is when folks are in that fear or in that uncertainty, the tendency is to block it out, to cover it up, to move away from it. And that can be fairly detrimental. And it closes them off from a lot of their own creativity, a lot of their own juice that is essential and vital to the health of their business. So the stress is high. There's a lot coming at you every single day, fires to put out. And so a lot of the leaders that I work with are in a highly reactive position, and a lot of their energy is getting used up dealing with emotional content that they're trying to hold off, meanwhile putting out a bunch of fires, and they're not accessing that part of themselves that's so desperately needed. So when I'm sitting down with some of my assessment comes from a place of, I just want to check out what's happening. The story is going to unfold. When someone comes to me, they've hired me or they've brought me in to solve an issue. But as I dig a little bit deeper, there's always an issue behind the issue. And you get down to something fairly personal, something fairly human, something fairly emotional. So while everybody's actually different that comes through the door, there are a number of components that I'm consistently looking for. And I seek to teach each person and help them build the skills that will help them pull out their genius, help them pull out their gifts. So the first thing I always look at when they come in is what their mindset is. If you look at the literature today, the stuff coming out of Google, a lot of the studies, everyone knows that a growth mindset is essential for a leader's ability to act. And a growth mindset is essential for the team. So when you see your work as a lab for learning, where we're continually developing and you're growing through our efforts and experiences, where failure starts to shift out of this thing we're avoiding. Instead, we start to see failure as feedback, as new information for us that we can utilize to apply to our business. We can learn to improve and to change. It starts to shift how we respond. Our bodies relax. And can't stress enough moving from a failure mindset, from a fixed mindset where we're holding steady and holding tight, trying to keep things within the line. If we're in a growth space, we're really flexible. And I find that it really enhances a person's ability to maneuver and think quickly on their feet.
I love that. If you were looking through the different sort of polar opposites of growth mindset, I know that you said sort of you got fixed mindset and failure mindset. And it kind of comes back to that abundance concept of how people, if you think you've got abundance, then obviously it'll come to it because you live your life around it. So from that mindset perspective, is there only fixed and failure? Is it something that we just go and put in ourselves? Is it something that we're always trying to protect ourselves? Does it come from us growing up? Like, what's sort of run us through a little bit about sort of that growth mindset?
I think it does come from our training. I like to think about our childhoods as a time when we have our operating systems installed, and we got a free one, and the free one isn't always the best thing for us. But a lot of us have parents where the parents are trying to protect us. We didn't get the best messages, the best parenting, so we tend to come from a fear place. We're scared, we're uncertain, our own sense of value isn't clear. So we're trying to please others and make sure that we do it right. And as we grow up through school, we're trying to get the right grades, trying to do the right thing. And I think I notice a lot of us are operating from that mindset. You know, as people grow older and put themselves in situations, that becomes harder and harder to break out of. And, you know, regardless of how high up someone is that I work with in terms of their position, I find that to be a pretty normal component of it. They don't trust themselves. They're scared. They're fixed. They don't want to upset the person in front of them. They're afraid of conflict. And a lot of that just comes out of who they were and who they grew up to be and in the kind of the family systems that they were in, the cultures that they were steeped in. So why would they do it any different if they've never seen a different example? So what I find is the pressures and the intensity of the startup, for instance, really forces people to shift and have to open up to a different way of experiencing it.
When we progress through, so we've got a bit of a sense of where we are. We're starting to understand this growth mindset and not sort of have a fear of failure and things like that. What do you then typically sort of step people through, or what's the next evolution of it?
Yeah, so the first one being growth mindset. The other thing I'm looking for right away is if someone's coming from a victim place or an owner place. It's black and white. It's really simple to pick out. It's always the first thing I teach. All of us are standing in a victim position at some point. We always do it. And we find it if we're resentful, if we're blaming, if we see others in situations as a source of our problems. It can be very subtle or it can be very blatant, but regardless, it's toxic for us and it's really disempowering. And so I'm always looking for the language that people use when they show up. So if it's somebody else's fault, if they don't have any control, if they feel angry that someone's not doing something, you really can hear for them that they're waiting for someone else to take position instead of taking that leadership role of ownership and take responsibility for their experience. So I've heard it in terms of even if you're going to fire somebody, a good leader in there is going to take ownership right away and say, look, I made the hire. I made the assessment. I brought you in. And I have to own the fact that I wasn't able to keep you along in the way or I made the right choice. And it just makes a huge difference in terms of the culture and how people can follow. In the teams that I work with, when that victim aspect is in the leadership, it's very toxic to the whole team and it becomes hard to operate. What I notice is the people in the victim mindset, they actually take it personally if you point it out to them. So if they're in the victim place, it's going to be difficult to be in the growth mindset. But if they're in an ownership place, they're going to be far more flexible, willing to look at their failures, willing to look at the landscape and take responsibility for it. And that's a muscle. You know, it takes time. It takes a safe space to develop it because it's easier to pass the buck than it is to step forward and take ownership.
I think that's an awesome point. Is it just a matter of just removing the word fault from your vocabulary? Is it just a matter of just sitting there and just putting your hand up and say, this was my problem? Because I could see it going to the other extreme where you put your hand up and just take responsibility for everything. And then that could have its own set of implications as well, couldn't it?
Sure. Yeah. Then I think you're overreaching. And then you're going to, you know, I don't think that it's going to be an authentic response that you're taking ownership for everything. It's going to weigh down. It's too much on your shoulders. And that's an overcompensation. So we want to find that sweet spot where you really can see where, you know, you give a clear assessment. What decisions did I make? What factors went into me taking the actions that I did? And if I'm in a place where failure is okay and I'm allowed to learn, then it's easier to take ownership for that as well. So that's you can see how these two things work together and within ourselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what's the third step?
Yeah, the third step is a big one. I find that emotional development is one of the central tenets of any leadership development of anybody that wants to take the next step in not only becoming better in their position, in their role, but also better as a human being. And one of the central tenets for me that's part of the emotional development is our ability to sit in discomfort. Good emotions feel great. We're always happy to feel those, and there's a premium placed on being in a happy place. But let's face it, that's not part of startup life very often. We do get to celebrate. We do have those moments, but generally there's a lot of grind. There's a lot coming at us and huge amounts of stress. It's a roller coaster. So mostly what I see on the ground is anxiety, fear, frustration, and we're trying to stay above it. We're trying to stay ahead of it. And the emotional development piece is slowing it down, giving ourselves room to say, I'm just going to slow down and feel it. And what I love to do with clients is we call it putting the picnic blanket down. And all we do is we put that blanket down right in the middle of the fear. We put a blanket down right in the middle of the anxiety and learn to sit with it. And instead of reacting to it, instead of reacting from it and putting it into our actions, our decisions, and what we're doing, we begin to realize that we have the capacity to sit in it. And that kind of muscle, that kind of resiliency goes a long way. And the cost of not developing emotionally is high. I think there's a bottom line to this. This isn't, while it's a soft skill, there's a lot of money involved. One of the examples I love is somebody just contacted me a couple of weeks ago who's a CEO of a 7-year-old company here, a tech company, and they've done really well. And she's burned out. She's tired. She's been doing it for a long time, and she's ready for her next thing. She wants to go build her next cool company, and it'll be great. But it's caused a lot of conflict in terms of her original team, and people aren't happy, people are frustrated, and in an effort to appease them and avoid the conflict, she was ready to give them a bunch of equity and back out with not much money because she just didn't want to sit in that discomfort, wanted everybody to be happy, and wasn't willing to step into the ring in a clear, fairly fierce way. So we talked, and one of the pieces of work was starting to unravel how she's afraid of conflict, how she has been for a long time, and that she always wants things to work out, and that she feels like if she steps forward and uses her own voice, that it's going to have a negative impact, and people are going to either fight or abandon her. And that's a pretty primal fear that shows up, and that's a lot of money to leave on the table just because we haven't done the work to unlock that strength, that emotional piece. So I think it has huge costs. I'm watching it each and every day, from teams that are on the verge of great success to someone just starting out, that they're generally running a lot of stuff through these unprocessed emotions, and it's costing them. There's a lot of time, a lot of cleanup, a lot of poor decisions made, a lot of money lost just because we're not clear what we're feeling. We're not clear what to do with it.
So we get there and we just lay this picnic blanket down. You might be saying, hey, this is crazy. You've worked for 7 years, blood, sweat, and tears, and now you're willing to walk away for next to nothing. Is it just a matter of sitting down and saying, what are you really scared of? Do we need to confront this? Does she go back and say, look, I've changed my offer. This is what I want. I need to get this amount of money out of it, or I'm willing to do this amount of time in the business. How does that actually work?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love it. There's two parts to it. What I always believe is if we can take time to sit with the emotions first, I always call it building fences. So if we build a fence around the emotion and go within the fence and hang out there and get to a place where we feel okay, we feel regulated, our brain settles in, you know, we're not firing from the reptilian place, we're coming from a much more even, regulated spot, then we can actually look at the decisions from a very even perspective. We're going to know what to do. Then we can actually read it. And then when that person's coming at us with more intensity or anger, we're much more equipped to see their anger for their anger and make room for it instead of react to it. So unless we do that emotional work, we tend to react, we tend to back off or get scared. And what I'm proposing is that first we sit with that emotional content, become okay with it, and then we can talk about how we're going to solve it. But if we're going to solve it from the anxiety, if we're going to solve it from that unsure place where we're not okay, I don't think it's going to go very well.
Yeah, I think that emotional maturity is really important. How many times have you been in a tense situation where you've just got an email and then you just type in cap lock and you just write something back straight away and the next day it's like, oh, I shouldn't have sent that. So whenever I got in those high tense situations, especially when we're going through selling our company and tempers were flaring and everyone's trying to get their own, that I would never write back the same day. I would always sleep on it and come back. And the clarity that you would have from a good night's sleep or just removing your emotion from that decision was day and night. And that was a really big part for my emotional development as I went on through my career as well.
It's not easy to do either, because the initial instinct is to go right at
Absolutely.
It, you know, to get into the fight, to push it down and to assert the power.
Get a bit bulldog-ish. So what's the final step?
Yeah, the final piece that I'm always looking at is just time. I noticed that the tendency is to get more reactive. In terms of our day, we feel like we don't have enough time in it. And I sincerely believe that with a little bit of focus, some structuring, we can utilize our time in a clear way and create more of it. You know, one of the CEOs I work with in a tech firm out in California, he's a master at his schedule at making time. And he ends at 5:30 every day, even though he's in a startup. He still goes home right on time and he has time for his family. And what I really like about him is he's clearly structured in how he works about his day. So everything's got a time limit to it. Everything has a place. And he also leaves times at the end of the day for the gray areas. I just find that a lot of us are sort of ticking off and tend to get lost in the basic fires that come at us. We're constantly reactive. And if we can step back, take a time, I mean, one of the suggestions I always have is take an hour at the beginning of every week and sit quietly. Just from 8:30 to 9:30, this is one of the things I do with everybody. Sit in front of your desk, turn everything off, and with a sheet of paper and a pen, and just sit. And what ends up happening is by giving time to yourself, giving space, a very natural prioritization steps forward and people become much more effective and they know what needs to be done. It's this kind of idea of trusting ourselves. I love creating spaces for that. I always have people creating 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there of just blank open space. Because if we give ourselves that little bit of time to slow down, that 10 minutes of meditation, we notice that we're moving slower, we're a little more paced, and yet we're able to respond instead of react which is extremely helpful for everybody.
Yeah, and there's no excuse for not having enough time in the day. You and I were hanging out together last month, and we're on a private yacht. You're playing chess with Sir Richard Branson himself, and you know he's the type of guy who probably has over 400 different companies and still manages time to go play tennis, go kiteboarding, and go sailing with other entrepreneurs and play chess and do all these things. So, you know, we get locked down in our day-to-day business where we think there's no more time in the day and we need to be working 15, 16 hours a day. And then you look at the other side of the coin, which is, you know, one of the reasons why we created More Time, More Profit, because time is so important to us. There is always more time that you can get back, can't you? You can delegate your jobs to other people. You can manage your time better. There's so many other tools that you can use, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think that there's a difference between busy and effective. And a lot of us, we feel like we, you know, the culture of any startup or any venture that we're in is we want to look busy. And if we see somebody else slowing down, there's a lot of judgment towards it, right? You know, you see somebody, they think they should be working harder. What are they taking time off? And so the tendency for us is to overwork and to push. And by overworking and pushing, we tire ourselves out, we get exhausted, and then we're less effective. And I think, you know, Richard's one of those great examples for all of us of just being purely effective with, what's the statement? A sage can get done in 10 minutes what takes the warrior 2 years. So there's something really profound about that ability to slow down, to take care of yourself, to do the right things. And that's a hard sell. It's a hard sell for me, and I've been doing this for a long time, this development work, to actually make myself slow down and eat some lunch, drink some water, do a little bit of meditation. And yet, every time, it hits the mark, and I get so much more done. And I'm far more effective with my clients. And that's part of the discipline for us. I try to build that in with everybody.
Which must be very difficult in New York City, I'm sure.
Yeah. Everyone's going to ask you why. What's the point?
What's the direct payoff?
And then they go drink.
My question to yourself, Jeff, is when you're looking at sort of all of these extremely highly intelligent and highly active entrepreneurs, is it one of these concepts where, as long as you understand, to your points, like you need to be growth mindset, always need to be an owner and always have like your develop emotions and things like that, is it just like a tick in the box? So cool, I've done 4 weeks with Jeff and Norris at all, I get it. Or is it something that everyone, similar to your point about every week someone needs to sit down for an hour just with a notepad and they just need to sort of recalibrate? Is it just when we recognize it, or is it something that we just should never stop and just continually always seek someone else out to help us?
Right. I think that it's a little bit of both. I think what comes down to is the habits that you're building in and the structures that you're putting in place that ensure you're going to be at your best. You're going to be firing at an 8 out of 10, a 9 out of 10. So for each of these, what are the structures that we put in place, for instance, for the emotional development? What are you going to do to stay in the growth mindset? What are the things that you do to support that sense of spaciousness and a sense of time? And that's what the coaching model is about, is number one, recognizing the value of it and making it a priority. And once someone recognizes that, hey, if I take the steps to put these things into place, it's going to have a positive impact. It's going to make a difference in my day-to-day experience, both for myself and for the people that I'm around. I've got a set of tools that I love that I ask people to do and play around with it till they find the systems that work for them. And everybody's going to be different. Everybody has a different rhythm. Some people want to work all night. Other people want to work during the day. It's not about falling in line in any way. It's about getting really in touch with your own rhythm, your own nature, your own instincts, trusting those and allowing those to come forth and taking responsibility for it so you're doing everything that it takes to stay there. And it's not easy. You know, I don't profess that this is something that's just an overnight change. It's a day-to-day piece of work, and it helps when we have support, and it helps when you have good folks around you that are also interested in doing it. And, you know, if we could build our companies in a way that this is acknowledged and brought in creative ways, I think that it's a win. You know, the bottom line's better. It feels better to go to work. The talent's better. I mean, the overall experience is going to be a much more interesting, much more engaged one for everybody. And that translates.
All right, Grant, I know you've been scribbling away frantically on your notepad. Can you just give us an overview or wrap-up points of the show and just take us through the framework that we can take into the office tomorrow and we can unlock our inner genius?
Yeah, look, sir, what I've done is I've just written down a quick summary of sort of the five key areas. And I know that there were four that we mentioned, but I think there's a first one that, Jeff, you consistently touch base on. So step one is really get a sense of where we are at and set the scene. So we've got to ensure that we're in a safe environment when we do this, whether it's something familiar, whether we've got raised energy after the gym or something, whether we just need to be in a comfortable chair. And basically we need to start looking at exactly where we're at. So time, stress, pressure, all these things. and more or less just let's check out what is happening internally. A key thing that I've done many times is to find the root cause is the ask why five times. So you always ask, why am I feeling that? Why? The second part is then we want to look at what mindset am I currently in? And obviously the desired mindset is the growth mindset. So more often than not, what we have is a lot of people with a sort of a fixed or a failure mindset where typically they're scared to fail, they're not wanting to cause conflict, etc. But we need to start learning and developing ourselves around focusing on knowledge, challenging ourselves, really feeling empowered and always learning. And I think a good question that you raised there is basically in one word, how am I feeling towards my business, my employees? If I was to summarize all that, is it growth? Is it failure? Is it scared? Etc. I think that's exactly how you can understand that mindset. The third part is, are we feeling as a victim or as an owner? And obviously the desire is to be an owner, but how can we progress through that? So victims typically blame others, they look for ways out, they resent actions that people have, and everyone else is always the problem. Whilst an owner wants to empower others, they want to own their own mistakes, they want to evaluate negative and positive contributions, etc. So it's more or less trying to progress. When we start seeing that negative viewpoint, how can we turn it on its head and actually progress through it? And a good question is, am I constantly blaming others or am I sharing with their faults? And I think if the answer is always, yes, I'm blaming everyone else, then obviously we still need to develop on that part. The fourth point is, what level are your developed emotions? So the desired outcome is we want to be in control of them. We'll never be a perfect in our emotions, but we can control them. We will have stress, but we won't let it control us, right? We'll accept it and use it to try and motivate us. We have fear, but instead we don't react on it. We focus on the success and the final outcome. We might feel exhausted, but we'll consistently work through it by reprioritizing our time. And I think by looking at that, I think the best question is a point that you raised, Jeff, around, am I emotionally exhausted or am I emotionally generative? And then fifth is, how focused is our time? So obviously the desired one is we want it to be effective. So we want to ensure that we're always having a clear structure, that at all times we're protecting our hourly time, or whether it's 15-minute blocks, hourly blocks, etc. And I think the real caveat to this is we don't want to be reactive. We always want to be proactive. So a good idea is to spend that hour a week to really slow down and think through your week. So the question that I've come together with is really, am I being busy or effective? And if the answer is I'm being busy, then we need to work on how do we become effective. And I think by sort of asking ourselves those sort of five different key questions and knowing where we need to get to, we'll be able to progress through such a key framework, whether we need a coach or anything to help us through with it. How'd I go, Jeff?
Yeah, it's good. I think you got it.
Jeff, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Can you tell us where we can go find out a little bit more about your website, social media, or something you wish to promote, or how we can get into your coaching program?
Sure thing. You just look me up on my website at jeffhanslick.com, and there's a contact form there, and just shoot me an email, and you know, I'm always open to a conversation. That's how it starts.
And we'll put that link in the show notes for people playing at home. We'll be continuing this conversation over at Facebook. You can go to Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit group and join in the conversation with us there.
Thanks, everyone. Don't forget to jump onto iTunes, click subscribe, and leave us a review of exactly what you've taken away for this podcast with Jeff.
That's it from us. We'll catch you the same bat time, the same bat channel next week. It's bye for now.
Catch you later, guys.
You've just been listening to More Time, More Profit podcast. For more info, check out moretimemoreprofit.com. Make sure to tune in at the same time next week for another dose of real-life business strategies.